Major Politics. I'm Scott Stearns.
Hi, this is Paul Sickle. Well, listeners, welcome to the new administration.
Yeah.
That's when you'll hear this.
Exactly.
But it's a penultimate night, actually final night of the Trump administration. It's a penultimate day, January 19th.
We're on the eve of the inauguration. By the time this is uploaded, we will have a new administration. We will have President Biden and Vice President Harris. It's exciting. It's certainly a time for some reflection on where we've been. And also, we're looking forward to where we're going. Lots
to think
about.
Uncle Rick, of course, would like a second Trump presidency. If he can't quite get it tomorrow, he's hoping for it in 4 years.
Since last time we were up, mid-December, we had obviously talked about the election results, which were in dispute by most of the Republican Party. And since then, a number of events have taken place. Obviously, the Republican Party was fighting tooth and nail in the courts and in the realm of public opinion about who actually won, even though Biden ran away with it. The Electoral College wasn't close. The popular vote wasn't close. There was no evidence that there was any wrongdoing. And so here we are. We will have a new administration despite all the bitching and moaning. And,
right. It was a decisive win. It was. I think you could say it was a closer election, but it was hardly the closest we've been through.
When you consider he won by 7 million votes in terms of the actual vote count, and by 306 to 232 in terms of the Electoral College. I mean, obviously, if the number...
It depends on how you like to score it. I mean, you could say it's a little like Bush's 2004 reelect or Obama's 2012 reelect about that. Size, if you're looking at Electoral College, it was somewhere between the two. If you're looking at popular vote, it was actually better than any of those. If you're looking at the tipping point states, you could argue it was closer from that perspective. It just depends on the eye of the beholder. If you want to make an argument that it was a very close election, you could do that. But what you can't do is make an argument that Biden did not win.
It is worrisome to me that if the election actually had been closer, if it had come down to like one state and a few thousand votes, what kind of shenanigans would they have been able to pull off in the courts?
Had it been a truly close election?
Yes, yes. That would be, I think, very worrisome given
We'd probably be looking at a Trump second.
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. I mean, it's some of the things that have occurred I would have thought unthinkable not so long ago.
What happened was your country club Republicans, even those who supported Trump, immediately stood down on November 7th.
Right.
Like George W. Bush issued a statement. Old school Republicans said, it was over. The business lobbies, they all said, look, this is over. Because they knew that this was unacceptable. And it wasn't going to play in the markets. It wouldn't play in the international community. And they were looking at the big picture. You know, it was a clear win for Biden. There wasn't really much of a way to say it wasn't. I mean, there wasn't any way to say it wasn't. The further we got away from November 7th, the more clear it got. You know, except maybe you could say Arizona got a little tighter, but Georgia became even clearer. Mm-hmm. You know, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan. Obviously, doing a little bit of analysis, I can tell you, and I think I might have said this last time we talked, had we not had all of these restrictions on field canvassing, I'm pretty confident we would have turned out a lot more votes in Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse, Eau Claire. We probably would have won the state by 3 or 4 points.
Which
doesn't sound like a lot, but it would have been a lot more.
These days, I think that's pretty good.
It would have been pretty solid, actually. Yeah. It was still clear, though. It wasn't.
Yes.
There have been several closer elections in Wisconsin.
I would call it decisive.
So by comparison, if you're scoring at home, Gore won by 5,000 votes in Wisconsin in 2000. Kerry won by 10,000 votes. Mm-hmm. And Biden by more than 20,000. And Trump won by about 23,000 4 years before. So.
Correct. As I mentioned, there's been a number of events that everybody's aware of. But just to kind of walk through where we've been, last time we spoke, the U.S. Senate stood at 50 Republicans, 48 Democrats, with two to be decided down in Georgia. And I know we had discussed that race last go around.
That went okay.
It went very well. I was hopeful that this would go well, but certainly given history, I thought, the edge still was with the incumbents, with the Republicans, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. As it turns out, both John Ossoff and the Reverend Raphael Warnock pulled off victories. They were pretty solid victories too. Warnock won 51-49 over Loeffler, and John Ossa 50.6 to 49.4% for Purdue. So pretty good victories once
all the outside the margin of a recount. I'll tell you what, represented a significant improvement from the down ticket races nationally. The down ticket races nationally appear to have been about 1.4 points more to the right of Biden. So if Biden won the state by 0.4 points, then in theory, the natural place would have been about 1 point Republican. And sure, they flipped that on its head. And in fact, the candidates themselves probably started at even a worse position in the November election. So they really showed up. They wouldn't have won had it not been for Trump throwing a fit.
Well, yeah, because what happened
is, had Trump conceded, they wouldn't have won.
No, yeah. I mean, he kept the focus all on him. And again, the whining about the election and, you know, I'm Trump and I'm a victim of the media and the fake news and the rigged election. And I mean, they had rallies down in Georgia, but it's not like he spent most of his time talking about how great a senator David Perdue is or Kelly Loeffler.
Right.
It was all
well,
about
the other
him.
Thing is, but I think the other thing is just by talking about how he was robbed, you did two things. One is, as you said, diminish the value of the election for Republicans, but you also pissed off a lot of Democrats.
Well, and you created some doubt, I think, amongst some Republicans about the voting system itself and whether or not it could be trusted. I mean, some of the non-traditional voters, I'm sure, said, fuck it, I'm not going to bother. Trump's not on the ballot.
Right.
I don't know these people. I'm not showing up.
But I think you had actually had, which wouldn't have still been a problem, had Democrats not shown up like they usually don't. Mm-hmm. In a runoff in these elections, Democrats did show up.
Yeah.
And yes, it was Stacey Abrams and all that, but it was also the Democrats were angry. Black Democrats saw their vote being taken away. They saw nothing happening on COVID, and they saw this president pretending he won an election.
Just a constant reminder from Trump that, hey, I won this election, even though don't believe in your lying eyes that show you the vote counts that say that Biden won. It's a reminder of the history of the suppression of the vote in a place like Georgia.
And for moderates, it was a reminder of all the obnoxiousness you can't stand about Trump, why you didn't want to vote for him in the first place. It was just terrible politics.
It really was.
Very beneficial, though, to us. And at the time, in the middle of the night or early that morning, I was pretty happy with the way things were working out, even with the bellicose rhetoric and all that. I thought, well, it's benefiting us politically.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe the rhetoric just went a little too far and almost cost us our democracy or people's lives. I don't know if they would have been. I don't know how close they really got to overthrowing democracy. I think it was a pretty bad play, but they certainly got close to causing a lot of destruction.
Right. Well, and so you had all the protestation of the election results, and then you add Georgia into the mix on January the 5th. And then the very next day is the day that the U.S. Senate meets and the U.S. House in a joint session. And everything usually is pretty boring. It's usually barely even
pro forma.
It's not usually a big deal. Yeah, like you said, it's pro forma. It's just kind of going through the motions of something that's called for constitutionally. And
were you there in 2001 when Al Gore gaveled it down and counted the votes for Bush?
Yes, I was.
Did you actually get to witness it?
I was in D.C. I wasn't actually there because I think it was on a weekend.
But you worked for a senator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But of course, it just shows how, like, you barely remember what you were doing.
Right.
Because even though it was a contested election, it was no longer contested.
In 2001, you didn't have any senators sign on. So the process is, as some of you may be aware, if you are going to contest in this joint session of Congress the certification of a given state, you need a member of the House and a member of the Senate to sign on. And then each chamber deliberates and has to vote up or down on whether or not it's a legitimate protest, essentially. So,
and even then, it's not entirely clear what happens, even if both chambers were to say, you know what? Because I believe both chambers would have to say, we're not going to count the vote for
correct.
It to get thrown into doubt. Even then, you know, I guess then it would go to the House of Representatives in theory or something like that. Like if there was short of 270.
So in the midst of all this, they meet. It's January the 6th in the early afternoon. And meanwhile, you know, Trump's holding this giant rally down the street from the Capitol and going off about how the election was stolen and you got to fight hard or you're not going to have a country anymore and all this bullshit. And
you'll never retake your country through weakness. You have to show strength.
You have to be strong. Yep. And Rudy Giuliani's calling for trial by combat and
trial by combat.
It's all this nonsense, getting people fired up and all this. And I mean, you already had some.
And it worked.
It got the crowd rallied up, and you had some groups there that were already planning on ransacking the Capitol. But obviously this kind of forms a mob mentality, and next thing you know, you have a lot of people heading towards the Capitol.
Well, ransacking the Capitol was not going to work with 200 people.
No.
It was only going to work. Now, maybe there were only 200 people ready with the zip ties and the weaponry and ready to actually do the hostage, but you need 100,000 behind them to push them. Yeah.
Because you had some of these militant groups that are always kind of planning these subversive activities against the government, and it's white supremacist groups and other insurrectionists, and they were part of this. A lot of others were just kind of, you know, coming along, and that are just all just, you know, right-wing people that are just pissed off, and they actually believe that the election is stolen because their dear leader is telling them so.
Incredible is how the chain reaction played out, the domino effect actually played out, and they actually got somewhere, which is what's leading to all the investigations, which what makes people think Trump really did try a coup, which is what's made everybody stay up late at night for the last 14 days.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you had that combined with the lack of planning on Capitol Police not being adequately prepared. They did not have National Guard at the ready. They had to call on the Metropolitan Police in DC. They were the first ones there to back them up. But, you know, it took time to get reinforcements from other areas. And then
let's just say this clearly. The National Guard was told not to participate.
Well, in the DOD
Department of Defense wouldn't let them out, which certainly, if it doesn't mean it, it certainly points to the fact that somebody at the White House or in the Pentagon answering the White House wanted these people to not have support. They wanted the Capitol to be vulnerable.
Of course.
That's why you're going to see this thing go on for a long time. Trump's probably going to get out of it, honestly, because he's going to say, I said peacefully, and then I called them off. You know, he'll say, at the end of the day, if somebody has to go down, take the fall for it, it'll be below him. It might be the defense secretary, it might be the NSA guy that they're burrowing in at the last minute, that guy Ellis. It probably won't be Trump, quite honestly.
If you look at the timeline, this thing went on for hours. It wasn't like 10 minutes and it was quashed. And
I had a friend who was in the building at the time, and I was getting texts that was going on, and it was terrified. They're like, now we're in an undisclosed location. The electoral votes are secured.
You know, regardless of what pre-planning was done by the sergeant at arms or the chief of the Capitol Police or at the DOD level, all it would have taken, you know, shortly after this thing broke out and windows were getting smashed and police were getting crammed into doors, people were getting trampled, all it would have taken is Trump going all out and deploying the guard, going on national television, calling for calm. He didn't do any of that. He's sitting back at the White House watching this on Fox News, enjoying the show. I mean, it took hours for him just to release like a pre-recorded video streaming. Like, he didn't even do a live television announcement. It's so plainly obvious that he was complicit in this.
I mean, the gun is smoking. I'm just thinking, in this court of law, will you be able to raise a reasonable doubt? Probably he would be, because of the...
Well, he's escaped culpability so many times. I mean, that's kind of...
He's quite good at it. In some ways, Trump is a problem, but he is also a symptom. And so, in some ways, what is important to me is finding who were the people in the Capitol Police that let the guard down on purpose, like seemingly on purpose? Who were the people, you know, in the Defense Department who made the wrong call?
A lot of that is still yet to come out. The FBI investigation has all the, it looks very much like a very thorough investigation, given the number of arrests that are taking place. There's a lot more coming out there. And I mean, we don't need to go into all the details because everybody's reading it. It's on the news and it's pretty troubling. And we're going to have an inauguration tomorrow.
Nobody there.
Right. But, I mean, it was already going to be pretty limited, just given that right. the pandemic is still in full steam, even though the vaccine is starting to roll out. You know, obviously, there's a long way to go.
Poorly. The vaccine is rolling out very poorly.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully that improves in the days ahead. The capital itself is locked down. I mean, when you look at the street grid right now, it's like the core of DC is basically like you're not.
You can't use a vehicle driving. On most
no,
of it.
No, there's, I mean, over a dozen metro stops that are closed that you can't
currently
utilize if you know DC at all.
I was wondering what if you live in those immediate environs? I mean, because it's not.
Well,
like it's the fence on the just on the mall, or I was trying to figure that.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty much closing off only federal property, but there are areas and blocks like adjacent to the Capitol, for instance, where I mean there's residential right around the Supreme Court and the Capitol complex, but
I saw was open behind there.
Yeah, like I mean there's some streets that like only residents can get to, so I imagine there's there's checkpoints where you have to show an ID saying like yes, I live over here off of North Capitol Street or whatever the case is,
right?
And they'll let you through, but obviously if you're not from there, from that neighborhood, then you would have to go elsewhere. So it's gonna be a very very different inauguration than we're accustomed to, even more so than we thought it was gonna look like a month ago. But the vice president elect the president elect left Delaware today and arrived in DC. He planned to arrive by Amtrak. That did not occur because of security concerns that we just talked about. Arrived and actually gave a nice somber speech at the reflecting pool.
It was like four sentences.
Yeah.
It was so quick.
It was more.
I loved the light display, by the way.
It was a nice touch and I think it was appropriate. And it was a good way to emphasize on the eve of his presidency kind of where the priorities lie, that it's not about him. And it's not about here, look at me, look at all the great things that I'm going to do. And we're going to do so much winning and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we have suffered a lot in this country and we have a lot of work to do. And this is where we start. This has to be the first thing because nothing else will work if we don't tackle this.
Yeah. The stimulus plan, I'm duly impressed by it. Part of me almost thinks you might as well just go the distance and he throws minimum wage in there, which is great. I almost think he should throw in a public option while he's at it and end the Taft-Hartley bill, ban right to work, which is, if he did all that, it would be like FDR all over again.
Yeah.
Get it done in one fell swoop while the Republicans are reeling. And frankly, here's the thing, is all of those provisions would be broadly popular.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, what he's doing is broadly popular, so it's good. I think he's got a really good chance of getting most of that enacted.
We have a reduced House majority, the Democrats do, and it's a 50-50 Senate with the Georgia races having been won by Warnock and Ossoff, with the vice president-elect Kamala Harris breaking the tie. From that perspective, it looks very close. However, when you look at the other side and you look at what is emerging with the Republican Party, with the outgoing president, Mitch McConnell, outgoing majority leader, who will be minority leader, which is very exciting in and of itself. Now, even he has kind of staked his claim to where the Republican Party needs to go.
Post-Trump Republicanism.
He came out and said, Joe Biden, this was weeks ago, he came out and said Joe Biden won the election.
On the time of our last podcast, yes.
Yeah, and he said as much on the day of the insurrection at the Capitol. And was calling out even members of his own party.
Well, he's really pissed off right now because his life was in danger. But
that and the fact that he lost his job as majority leader, I think he's pissed off for numerous
reasons. Trump not had just shut up. They would have at least won the Ossoff seat. I don't
possibly.
I think Warnock was compelling and might have had a chance to pull it off anyway. But I'm almost certain they would have won the other seat. So, which was all they needed.
It's pretty obvious he blames Trump for the fact that he's getting the demotion. So
he's right. Well, and I think he's correct.
So you're
probably has his finger on the. But go ahead.
You have a divided Republican Party emerging, and not everybody has kind of staked where they're going to fall. We kind of know where the Ted Cruz's of the world are going to be. Lindsey Graham is a chameleon that he changes from week to week. You never know where that guy stands. Don't count on him for anything. But a lot of others haven't yet. And we haven't even talked about the fact that the House impeached Trump for a second time in the days following January 6th. And right. That now falls to the Senate about whether or not they're going to convict. And it looks today like there's a very real possibility that Mitch McConnell could vote to convict. And we don't know that's going to take place. But if he does, he could very well lead a number of people in his caucus to go along with him. I don't know that I foresee a situation where Mitch McConnell would vote to convict if he can't get the votes on his side, because I think it probably weakens his position as minority leader.
There is the option that they could say, I don't like Trump, but I think the process is dumb. They could stay home.
Correct.
For sessions. And then you could have a conviction on a smaller number of voting senators, I believe.
Yeah. And there's going to be those that since we are, you know, changing presidents tomorrow, there's going to be those that say, hey, what's the point? Trump's already gone. Why do you have to move forward to convict? It's about accountability, first and foremost, given everything that's occurred. But also, you know, rolled into this thing, there's repercussions about whether or not he can even run again. The moment he started to not concede, but admit that, you know, maybe he wouldn't be president in January.
I bet you they don't get it done. Is what I'm thinking, because I think what's going to happen is Biden's going to take. Well, I also think this. Frankly, I think Biden's going to want to pass his agenda and get his agenda done and his cabinet in. In the course of doing that, all the attention is going to go there, and the fervor to convict Trump will decline. That's why I think it may not happen. I would certainly support a conviction, but I don't. I just don't feel like it's likely. This COVID relief bill has to pass to get the country back on its feet, because that's how we get you know, the whole thing, right? A lot of this stuff, the Paris Climate Accord, right? Confirming a cabinet. That's what we really got to get done right now. And, you know, unless Trump is tweeting, and of course they shut off his Twitter, but unless they're out there making a lot of noise themselves, the Trumpers, I don't think that they stay in the headlines enough to support a strong movement to convict. That doesn't mean that's right. I still think the fact is House members almost got killed. Republicans almost got killed.
It's almost more about the future of the Republican Party, you know, and how much they want to hang on to Trump. And if they want him to go away, they almost need the impeachment to happen.
That's another reason why I think the Biden team will probably, they won't say don't do it. I wouldn't be surprised to see them pushing their initiatives while this whole debate's going on and trying to get attention instead of that.
You know, my hope is that they can do a balancing act and try to, you know, walk and chew gum.
So, Scott, we formed this podcast to talk about the Trump administration. What are we going to do here?
I don't know. I guess we'll hold Biden's feet to the fire.
I think we gotta at least check in once a month, at least till the pandemic's over, and then maybe a little more frequently if possible, because we'll get into 2022. An interesting thing is Wisconsin's governor has almost always switches parties in the opposite direction of whoever the new president is. That's bad for Evers, and there certainly are some storm clouds of brewing. That said, Republicans are in disarray right now, and any COVID response may go over well in the long run. So I think that that'll be a really interesting thing. But in the direction of Wisconsin, I think, is still, do we become a right-wing kind of state like Indiana, or do we stay more center-left like Minnesota?
Yeah.
And I think that the governor's race will go a long way to deciding that in 2022.
I would agree.
We also have the Ron Johnson race, too. So.
Yep. Yeah, that'll be a big one, and he has fallen in line with the Trump defenders, so he's getting a lot of heat for that.
Right. The need to be vigilant and active in local politics will really step up, and it's a challenge when you win the White House, honestly, because all the attention is there once again.
It all
and
shifts.
So, right, and then you start people, your activists. The people who really support you forget about local races and stuff. People were very interested in local politics right after Trump took over because they wanted to have a voice in the process.
Correct.
Now that it's taken care of, maybe the feeling won't be as strong. I don't know. I hope that's wrong.
I hope not.
We didn't just get here overnight with Trump, right? We got here because people did not pay attention that much because voting, you know, 60% or more of the public voting is unusual. It's starting to happen now.
I think there historically has been an over-reliance on our institutions and an underestimation of our adherence to norms historically.
Your institutions are only as good as the people behind them, and we took them for granted.
You have to remember, like, yes, we are a constitutional democratic republic. However, so much of the day-to-day operations of this country, it really does harken back to our origin story, which relies on common law. Yeah. Just people just being not dicks, you know, and just doing the right thing to get through the day. And when people start fucking around with that, this is where we end up.
Mind you, this isn't the first time people fucked around with it. Mm-hmm. The entire slavery episode was that. That's why we had to have a war.
Yep.
You know, and so on and so forth.
But it should definitely keep people on guard and make them realize, like, really how close we are.
Yeah.
It should not be brushed under the rug.
All right.
All right. Well, it's been good talking to you, Paul. A lot has occurred in just over a month since the last time we spoke. Lord knows what we'll have going on a month
from
now.
Just for the record, Uncle Rick was not in the Capitol.
No? Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I think he gets a little scared of Parler, too. I don't think he can figure out how to use it.
But,
he certainly has written some angry... He still is writing some angry emails. Don't get me wrong. He's still... So there you go. We may want to hear from him, his take on the Biden administration.
We'll touch base as we get into into the new White House and get his take.
Rick is the most Republican voting first name among men. Did you know that?
I think I had heard that, or maybe you sent that to me.
There you go. We'll ask him about it.
All right, everybody. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Yep.
Forward.